everybody. Welcome to the Delta Flyers. I'm your host, Garrett Wong. My co-host is Robert Duncan McNeil. Join us as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Robbie, how are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Good. Look at me. I'm on the bridge. I'm sitting kind of near, for those that are just listening to this, I've got a big photo of the Voyager Bridge behind me, and I'm lining myself up right down front where Tom Paris sat.
You're at the con, man.
7 years.
You're at the con.
That's right.
I love it.
I'm at the con.
Ah, the memories of the bridge.
Yeah. A lot of fun times.
Although the color of the carpet is a little bit off. So that might be.
This photograph is fading because it's old, like us, Garrett.
Yes. Okay. Hey, a couple of things I want to bring up.
Yes.
First of all, I had a dream that you were in my dream probably about 3 or 4 days ago. And I was walking past you, and this is the craziest thing. You were in a wheelchair, and I poked you in the chest. I went,
yes.
Boop, and I made this sound. I went, boop, like that. And then you didn't say anything to me, and you just ignored me, and you kept going on in your wheelchair. So I don't know what that's all about.
No,
I was really bizarre.
So that's funny. Well, I just saw this funny thing this morning. It was a Twitter account called the Brimley Cocoon Line. And what it is when Wilford Brimley made the movie Cocoon,
yes,
or when it was released, Wilford Brimley was like, you know, this was a movie, by the way, about like old people who are, you know, 1 foot in the door to death, like they're going to die. And then the alien egg shows up and all this adventure starts. With the old, super old people, right?
Yeah. Great movie, by the way.
Great movie, Cocoon. Mm-hmm. Well, Wilford Brimley was only like 51 years old or something when he made this movie.
God, younger than both of us.
Yeah, exactly. So this Twitter account basically like finds people and their birthday when they hit the point where they're passing the Brimley Cocoon line, where the age he was. And it shows photos of them like, okay, so, you know, whoever passed the Brimley Cocoon line, and here's them at that moment. And here's Wilford Brimley looking like an old guy, and they don't look old. It's crazy. It's funny. It's a funny Twitter account. I highly recommend
the
Cocoon line.
Give me the Twitter address for this. I think it's the Wilford Brimley Cocoon line. Is it that long?
I'm going to look it up right now.
Okay, you look it up.
This is the Twitter is at Brimley Line. So it's at
at Brimley Line.
Okay. Yeah,
at
B-R-I-M-L-E-Y-L-I-N-E. When Cocoon reached the theaters on June 21st, 1985, Wilford Brimley was 18,530 days old. This account makes note of people who have reached that age. And here we have Nick Offerman and a photo of him. Let's see, Sean Hayes has passed the Brimley Cocoon line. Robbie Duncan McNeil has passed the Brimley Cocoon line. Who else is in here? It's funny. It's just funny. Yeah, people have to go and look at it. I want to get on this Twitter. I want them to put me that I have passed the Brimley Cocoon line.
Oh my God.
Oh, okay. Enough about
that's some
Brimley.
Funny stuff. Okay. The other thing I wanted to bring up, we had some comments about the famous Harry Kim line, like a snake through the tube. Well,
yes.
I have a friend who's a big fan of Star Trek, Kira. Yes. And Kira is basically a shark biologist and just a biologist. And so they know a lot about
snakes and tubes.
Snakes. And Kira was talking about, snakes, you know, they can go into tubes. One of our admirals, Anna, said, it's a plumbing term, as in the snaking, you know. And I've never thought of it as a plumbing term. And this really, really
changes the whole game.
I would just want to say, interpret it as you will.
Although this leads us to bathroom on the ship conversations and all of that. I was just talking about NASA, real astronauts. Yeah. There are vacuums for the biological processes that have to happen for the male and female astronauts up in the space lab and things like that. And they have, I guess, like vacuum tubes that help them use the bathroom up at space lab and or the International Space Station. Space lab, I'm dating myself. That was like an old term for the original space lab. It's the International Space Station, people, please.
Yeah.
Robert Picardo was going to be very angry at me with the Planetary Society and using the wrong terms. Anyway, vacuums for peeing and pooping. So I don't know what we did on Voyager. I assume it was closer to plumbing, I hope, than a vacuum device that we had to use. But
right.
Well, also in the story moment, we were trying to sneak through smoothly and not detected.
Like yes.
But interpret it as you will. That's the beauty.
Interpret
of Star
as
Trek.
You will. Anna, yeah. You're right. Kira, you're right as well. Okay. All right. So this week's episode.
Yes.
Remember. That's the name of it. Remember.
I was.
You're waiting for the next part.
I was stunned. I was like, I don't remember.
Let's go watch this episode. Let's see what we remember about Remember. We'll be right back, guys. Thanks. All right, guys, we're back from watching Remember. Boy, oh boy. Can I first bring up some fun facts that Megan
found? Yeah, you can start wherever you want. Fun facts.
Fun facts. This episode was conceived as a Deanna Troi episode for Star Trek The Next Generation.
Really?
Joe Manosky, yes, the co-writer of the episode's story, recalled that that episode was actually a Next Gen story that Brannon and I came up with a long time ago, and it was going to be a Troi story. Lisa Klink took it over and reworked it and made it a Voyager episode.
Interesting. Well, we're going to talk to Lisa Klink for our Patreon patrons. We're going to get Lisa's coming on after this to talk with us about that process. But I got to say, like, it's funny you say that. I know a lot of stories on our show came from Next Gen nuggets that never got made or were kind of reinterpretations. Yeah. But I also was thinking as we watched this, like, there's obviously a lot of like Holocaust.
Yes.
Terrible metaphor
for sure
stories that we've done, and I find that that's like a often a go-to. But what I think is so, you know, it's an easy way to sort of put this in a category, but yet it's so much. It's also, you know, what's great about Star Trek episodes is they can relate to all kinds of experiences, like apartheid in South Africa and the Truth and Reconciliation commissions in Rwanda. Yes. With the Rwandan genocide and all kinds of, you know, this story of bigotry, genocide, horrible memories that get repressed, stories that people just don't want to talk about. Mm-hmm. I mean, here in America with our, you know, expansion west and Native American history and the indigenous people of North America, how horrible that was.
Agreed.
Like there's so many. Yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is like, I immediately thought about a Holocaust metaphor. I think as I was Googling around a little, I read some of that, but I just want to expand our vocabulary on some of these parables that we tell, and they can be, they can be used for all kinds of things.
The other fun fact was this episode was meant as a parable to the Holocaust.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
Fun fact. Fun fact number three.
Fun fact number three.
Eve Brenner, who played Jorah Morrell, also guest starred in Star Trek: The Next Generation. The episode is called Violations. And in that episode, it also featured a species with telepathic abilities being able to manipulate the memories of others. So she already did an episode like
I gotta say something about Eve Brenner. Mm-hmm. Eve Brenner, I may look this up right now. I swear I worked with her on something else. And I don't know if it was... called Second Chances that was on CBS for a while back in the early 90s. I feel like Eve Brenner may have been in that show with me, but I acted in a show with her on another series. I just can't place it. Maybe the fans will find that.
Wow. Out. Robbie?
Yes.
Haiku me.
I will totally haiku you right now. Here we go. Haiku for Remember.
I dare you. I dare you to haiku me.
Watch this. Here we go. Dreams or memories? B'Elanna discovers the truth, chooses to remember. Bam!
Ah, there you go. Yeah.
There's our haiku. Okay. Bam, bam for bam, bam, bam.
Here's my limerick for the episode, Remember. While escorting Anarin's back home, B'Elanna dreams memories alone. Regressives are shunned, but no one is bummed. Their true fate, none would ever condone.
Oh, 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 oh,
bam, bam, bam.
Oh, 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 nice.
Are you raising the roof for me?
I was raising the roof, yeah.
I spent more time on that one, actually.
Yeah, that was good.
I'm happy.
I like that. That was good. Nice rhythm to it. It was fun. It was, yeah. I love a limerick.
What's happening?
Teleplay by Lisa Klink, who, again, we will talk about this episode today.
Yes.
And story, Brandon Braga and Joe Manosky, as you said, came, very cool, came off of a story from Next Gen that never got made.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by Rick Kolby.
Vinrich Kolby.
I will say I didn't even know who directed it, but before the director credit came up, I was like, this is well directed. Out of the gate was very well directed. Rick always had a good sense of lenses and composition and staging, and it just always kept things dramatic and
moving
and kept the frame interesting and cinematic. Mm-hmm. Even in simple scenes, I give a big 10 out of 10 for Rick's directing of this episode. I thought he did a great job.
The Delta Flyer stamp of approval for directing goes to Rick Kolby over and over again. Yes.
Yeah.
Good job.
Very, very talented. And he was dating Kate at this point.
Yes, he was. He romanced Kate and Rick Kolby.
Yeah, they were officially dating.
Mulgrew.
Yep.
Yes.
Let's start with
look at that little flirty glance that Harry has right there, right?
I had to stop and go back. I'm like, seriously? What a creeper from like 50 feet away. You're like, you are just like, wow, wow, wow.
I just smiled at it, Robbie. Is it a crime to smile at another person?
It is not a crime to smile at a pretty alien.
All right.
No, it was just funny. It was just like all of a sudden the rack focus lens across the room and there's Harry creeping from 50 feet. And then he comes over, doesn't even look at B'Elanna the whole scene. And she's like, sure, you guys go on to dinner without, because you're like, I guess it'll just be the three of us. Awkward.
Yeah.
Go on without me. And you guys are out of there before she even finishes the sentence. Very funny.
Okay. What I wrote down about this scene, Harry has a crush on Jessen, clearly. But what's comical to me is the Anarans are sharing their conservation technology with us, but yet they don't even have warp capabilities. So it's like, how much really can they share with us technologically if they don't even have
interesting warp, it is interesting warp. Although this idea of them sharing some technology fits into the narrative we learn later that there was sort of this technological divide in their culture, that the people the regressives ultimately we learn the regressives want to stay more kind of traditional, and the new wave wants technology, technology advances, and that's really the divide as we learn in the story. Yeah. So.
Did you notice, Robbie, the change in Roxanne's voice
when she was playing Jorah?
No, this is in when she's talking to Jorah. This is still the opening scene in engineering. This is still the opening scene.
Yeah.
Jessen says maybe Harry could give us a hand, and Torres says, "Well, I'm sure he would if you asked him." Just in that phrase alone, it became very. It took on the same quality as Jorah Morell's elderly voice. So Torres was sort of speaking like, "Well, I'm sure he would if you asked him."
Really
weird. And it, like for me, if I'm in a taxi cab and the taxi cab driver happens to be from one of the former Soviet republics, I will start speaking in a Russian accent because that's what happens. If I'm in England, I start speaking kind of with a British accent. In Germany, I start speaking with a German accent.
I think you and I both do that because we moved around a lot as children. I do the same thing. If I go to New York, I start having a New York accent with a cab driver. Same exact thing. And I think it's because you and I both, as kids, we were moving all to different parts of the the world, different cultures.
Yep.
We had to blend it. We had to fit in quickly. So that's funny that you say that.
And maybe the same with Roxanne Dawson. With Roxanne, you know, she moved around a bit too, I'm guessing. And it's just, to me, I was like, wow, this is so not a tourist sounding voice. And it's just for that one line in that scene. Yeah. Every other line she has in that opening scene is normal Torres, you know? So
interesting.
That's one thing I picked up on. Yes. Let's move on to the next scene,
please. Well, we move on to Torres is in bed. Sleeping, or we think she's, we don't know where she is exactly, but she jumps up with a knock on the door, and she's in this flowy chiffon sort of very romancy outfit.
Yeah.
And basically we go into this vivid sex moment, which is very unusual for Star Trek generally, but it was definitely a very
passionate,
yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And by the way, Charles Esten, Chip Esten, who is an actor, was that guest star playing
Dathan,
right?
Like Nathan with a D.
Dathan, Chip Esten, or Charles Esten, became very famous on Nashville series. He's currently, I think, doing a show called Outer Banks on Netflix. He's a friend of a friend. I've met Chip a number of times, and and I had forgotten that he was in this show. He's gone on. He's gone on to a great country music career. He's got a big following because of Nashville. He became one of the replacements on Whose Line Is It Anyway, doing comedy improv. He's a very talented.
What?
Yeah, he's talented actor.
Wow.
I think he started as a theater actor doing the national tour of Buddy, the Buddy Holly musical. Chip Esten has done a ton of great work, super talented. Mm-hmm. I forgot he was in this episode and did a great job.
And super in shape too. You could see he had the gym body going on.
And that those kind of scenes are hard because I thought it was beautifully sort of pushed in, and you see as B'Elanna is taking off her, clothes, or they're both getting undressed. It was shot in a very sensual and passionate way, but not exploitive at all.
Tasteful. Yes.
Yet very tasteful.
Sensual, passionate, tasteful.
There I agree. I thought it was beautifully done.
Mm-hmm. Well, she wakes up out of this dream, and now we see we're in B'Elanna's quarters, and look at the color of her neon lighting. Everyone has a different neon lighting color scheme.
What was her
color?
Was she blue?
Hers is Klingon red. It was Klingon, you know, and even her nightgown is red. Like everything has that red Klingon red insignia color, right? So I thought that was interesting. Chakotay is kind
wakes
of berating
her.
I
thought that scene was great. Upside down shots. It's funny, because one of my first episodes of Dawson's Creek that I directed, I did an upside down shot, and I didn't remember seeing this shot in with Rick Colby, but it could have stuck in my head somewhere, and that memory, and I shot a similar kind of upside down shot with someone waking up before too. Anyway, Chakotay wakes her up. She runs out. She's apologizing in the next act and talking to Chakotay, but she starts confiding in him, very intimate, oversharing almost about her sex dream.
I love the quote. She said, the most sensual dreams I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
Were you kind of jealous? Because it wasn't about you. It was somebody else. It wasn't about Tommy.
I know. No, I wasn't really jealous. I'll tell you what I was jealous about is as she was telling him, she was like titillated, and they were flirty about, he was smiling like, there was a lot of, maybe at that point they were still thinking about Chakotay and Torres as a couple. I think they definitely thought about that in the first few seasons. That was definitely the most likely pair were those two.
That would make sense,
in my opinion.
Exactly. Right. And then the second most likely pair was Kim and Torres, but then we won't go into that.
Yeah.
Right now. Okay.
So meanwhile, Neelix has shut off the mess hall and turned the mess hall into Inara, the colors of Inara. There's an Inara themed party going on.
I love that music. Very spa-like, it spoke to me. That music was good. I loved our suits.
I thought our suits were nice. I love the moment where Neelix offers us algae puffs and I take one. And I don't know if you noticed my face after I was tasting it and just kind of walking out of frame. I was like, I couldn't tell if I really liked it or if it was disgusting, but the Inaran algae puffs definitely, made an impact on Tom Paris. That's for sure.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Do you remember that wardrobe, that piece of wardrobe that
vaguely.
You wore?
Yeah, okay. Vaguely.
I remember that suit, definitely. Because really? It was so funky because it connected up top and it just opened up, you know? Right. So there were no buttons along the torso. It was just at the neck. And I remember the collar. I remember that wearing that suit and I liked it because let's face it, we're always wearing the same Starfleet uniform in every damn episode. So yeah. To be able to wear something different is a dream come true, you know? And so I just, oh my God, I just love it. I really love that suit. I think Harry's hair looks fabulous in this episode as well.
Yeah, your hair looked good. I thought Tom's hair looked pretty good, if I do say so myself.
It did. Tom's hair did look good.
Well, one thing in this scene that made me very uncomfortable was when the Inaran leader, Jor, was playing the instrument. And... Mm. He was sort of caressing this large orb and it was playing music.
That sounds naughty.
Look at the clip. We're pushing in slowly as, you know, Janeway's feeling so moved and we've come out of, and we're pushing in and just the way he's caressing that orb instrument. I just found it very awkward. I got to be honest. I found it awkward. And then when Janeway's like, give me a chance. I'm like, oh God, no. Oh God, she's going to caress the orb. And she does. And he sort of telepathically shows her how to play.
My notes regarding that particular scene is that they telepathically impart this music knowledge using the psychic palm is what I've labeled it. Mm-hmm. Or the psychic Heisman. I'm going to put a little football in here. The psychic Heisman, because the hand
always,
goes like
always that, getting the football
right?
in.
And right off the bat, Janeway knows exactly how to play this thing like an expert, but it's too powerful almost. She's almost like backing away, like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, it became almost a Me Too moment of like, wait a minute. You've just a little too much. Right.
At the end of the scene, I laughed out loud when Chakotay says, someone says, where's B'Elanna? Why isn't she at the party? And Chakotay says with a smile, I think she might've gone to bed early tonight. Oh. I laughed out loud. Thought that
That's
was
true.
Very funny.
That's true. Hey, did you also, after the cheese puffs, the algae puff scene, did you notice that wacky smile that John Ethan gave to the camera as well? Oh, he did this goofy, like, just what's that?
Yeah.
It was just a little bizarre. So there's a lot of laughs and little inside jokes, I guess, going on right now.
She has another dream. And we meet her father, who's kind of, you know, reprimanding her for meeting this boy.
Can I interrupt you for 1 second to talk about the character of Jareth, played by Bruce Davison? I didn't realize that Bruce was the guest star in this episode, and I saw him and I was like, oh my gosh. And Bruce Davison, for people that don't know, he's had a very long distinguished career, stage, TV, film. On stage he was in The Elephant Man, The Glass Menagerie, so some really, you know, heavy hardcore plays that he's been part of. I got a huge kick out of seeing Bruce.
So in this flashback, the one moment I thought was very strange is he starts to leave. Bruce starts to leave and he turns back. He says, don't forget to drink your Terran juice. And she picks it up and then he looks back again and she drinks it. And I was like, what's in the freaking Terran juice? Like Rebecca said, don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid.
But I don't know if the Terran juice ever came back as a element. Like, I thought that was going to be a thing, like, oh, you're brainwashing, but
yeah,
I don't know.
So you thought it was some type of drug that was put in the Taran juice, you know, to control her?
Yeah, something like, I thought that's where it was going to go, and it didn't really, if that's true, and they never really answered that question. But anyway.
No, but I think you thought that because of the emphasis that Bruce put into that line. You know what I'm saying? There was that sort of undercurrent of like, hey, don't forget to drink your Taran juice. Like, if he just threw that line away, I don't think we really would think that anything other than that, right?
I thought it was going to be some kind of poison or drug, but I think it's even simpler than that. It's just, it was establishing this sort of control that her father had over her.
Correct.
He wanted her to drink what he said to drink, eat what he said to eat, think the way he said she should think. And ultimately that was the story. But the boy comes back in, they embrace, and all of a sudden his skin turns this horrible, you know, burned color and
melted face,
burned face. That's how that dream ends there. She talks to Chakotay about this, just describes how real it all felt, how, you know, she's really upset by this, and it just, she's never had anything like it. And he says, you know, why don't you talk to the Inarans?
Did you make note of anything about his quarters? I wrote down, whoa, Chakotay's quarters? ? Because I don't think we've ever been in his quarters before.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't remember them at all. Because the first thing I see is this crazy wall decoration, which looks like the Native American version of Captain America's shield, is sitting on the wall. And then he's got a desk there. And I'm like thinking, when have we ever been in this office?
Yeah.
I don't think we've seen it before, you know? So first time in Chakotay's office. Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Torres heads out from Chakotay, and she's walking down in the corridor, and she has one of these dreams now, not while she's sleeping, but it catches her in the middle of walking.
A waking dream in a way.
Right? Yeah, a lucid dream sort of situation. Yeah, and this time it is a kind of an award ceremony. And so Jareth, her father, gives her an award at the ceremony, and gives an inspiring speech to all these young people who are all sort of dressed in sort of uniform style. They're sort of rallying the youth toward the future. There's definitely a bit of a World War II sort of
Hitler youth
kind of vibe going on for sure.
Yeah.
And B'Elanna sneaks over to a corridor and has a secret conversation with her lover.
What I enjoyed about this scene is that, you know, because Torres is basically reliving somebody else's memories, she can act completely opposite of how Torres acts on Voyager.
Yeah.
And she is truly playing the giddy high school girl. I mean, just kind of just prancing around, which is really nice to see this different side of Roxanne's acting abilities.
Yeah. So. Roxanne was playing this very sort of sweet, innocent, and young, very youthful character.
Yes.
And I thought she did a beautiful job. I mean, if I haven't said that already, great job. Like, overall, Roxanne's performance in this is just really phenomenal.
Yeah. And what the punctuation or the end of this dream memory, Dathan gives the psychic palm, but the sensual psychic palm to Corinna so that she can feel, you know, what they've been doing in the past. And then that ends that scene.
Yeah.
We move to engineering, and Kes finds out that B'Elanna has passed out on the floor in the corridor near engineering. So then she has to be taken to sick bay, where we meet the doctor, and we see that the doctor has discovered that the implanted memories in Torres's subconscious are basically affecting her. The synaptic patterns of the implanted memories are not quite compatible with her neural pathways. So there's been some minor cortical damage, which the doctor corrected. So then he has an inhibitor to control her theta wave activity, which would then suppress her memories. So this is what they attached to her.
Yeah, the cortical inhibitor that he puts on her looks an awful lot like a mobile holographic emitter that the doctor wears later in the third series. Yeah, it's a round little prop. I wonder how often they use the same props and just sort of changed a couple.
Redressed it a little bit.
I mean, I know we did that quite often, but that definitely looked like the very much like the mobile emitter that became such a.
You know what, Robbie? We need to get we need to get some of these props guys that we worked with
oh, yeah.
as a guest on the show, you know, like John Nestowitz
or Alan's.
Alan. Yeah, any of these guys would be wonderful to just chat with a little bit, right?
Yeah.
It would be nice, for sure.
That would be great. Yeah, and those guys, the props department here, they were on The Next Generation and on The Next Gen. Some of those props department people had come from like the original series and the movies and things.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
Have deep, deep ties to Trek for sure.
Definitely. The next scene, we're in the mess hall and there's a conversation between Jor-Brel, Janeway, Tuvok, and Torres. And Brel's basically sort of discounting, or he's trying to say, certain aliens have picked up on our psychic field and they'll maybe she's just getting bits and pieces of everybody's collective memories, right? So he's just, you know, he's shrugging it off. Torres doesn't believe this. She's too, she feels it, that she can feel that it's so real that she's not really convinced by Jor-Brel's argument, to the point that she goes back to her quarters and removes the inhibitor.
She does.
Takes it off, you know, right?
Yep.
Did you see that small statue in her quarters right before she removed? There's a little statue there that looks like a cross section of a human brain.
Oh,
it's like just so bizarre. I'm like, what is that? So anyway, so that's
interesting because it's a cool little detail for this episode, but I don't know why B'Elanna would have that in her quarters generally.
Yeah. Okay, so her next dream. It's the resettlement of the regressives to a new colony. They're being called by name to get onto a transport. And did you notice who the first regressive was that you see on camera when they called?
Oh, it was Pablo, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Pablo
Soriano. One of our longtime background actors, Pablo Soriano. Pablo also didn't Pablo do stand-in work for
stand-in
probably Chakotay, right?
Yeah, I think for Chakotay. He was Chakotay's stand-in.
It was either Richard Starsted who did the stand-in for Chakotay or sometimes or Pablo.
Yeah.
Oh,
but yeah.
Pablo was
the first regressive checking out. I know. He's still doing it. I see Pablo's face in commercials and all kinds of things. Pablo was awesome.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's interesting because I didn't understand how Torres knew that it was Jor-Brel until I realized,
the scar.
The scar, yes.
Immediately, I got that. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But then you would think if they are an advanced culture, they would have a dermal regenerator that would probably not leave a scar like that.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
They had to keep that in there for the story, which really doesn't make sense in terms of how advanced these people are. But hey, for the story, you got to have the scar. Torres finds her on the floor in her quarters. And we realize that because this information was given to Jor-Brel in the earlier scene, Jor-Brel is really the one responsible for Jor-Morel's death. Mm-hmm. They cover it up somehow, but she does give the rest of the memories to B'Elanna.
She says, don't let these memories die. Please promise me that. They can't deny the truth. Very powerful. You know, this story of sort of dividing people and manipulating, we're about to get into a scene where the father completely manipulates her feelings of love for this young man and manipulates it and uses that as against her to turn her, against these people based on untruths, based on exploiting someone's love or fear or relationship, you know, exploiting his relationship as her father, exploiting that relationship to twist her mind around is just horrible. And we see that happen over and over again.
This scene in Corinna's bedroom.
Yeah.
This scene in Corinna's bedroom is so powerful because Jareth, Bruce Davison, really, he starts out, you know, with a certain amount of volume in his voice is definitely, it's louder in the beginning, but then as his argument goes on, it gets quieter and quieter and quieter until he just stops speaking. And that's when Corinna, her mind flips. It's so quiet that you can actually hear crickets. And then I wrote, wait a minute, crickets also exist on Inara? There's crickets there too. But this scene was so powerful. And this was the scene that really reminded me of Jews being sent to the concentration camp. This is when the Holocaust references really hit home for me. I was like, gosh, this is a extremely powerful scene overall.
After the scene where the father completely exploits her feelings and her relationship with her dad to turn her against her own instincts and her own beliefs, her own love. They execute these young men in the public square. Yeah. And then we go to jumping ahead a little bit. Corinna is shown as a teacher teaching young students. First of all, I got to say, Kate's son is in that scene. Alec Egan.
That's what?
Yeah. That what the boy that was sitting off to her left side, or that boy is Kate Mulgrew's son. I forgot.
No.
But Alec. Yeah. She has two boys, Kate, Ian and Alec. Ian's not in the scene, but Alec was the youngest, her youngest son.
Oh my,
was an extra.
That
basically.
Kid did look familiar. Okay.
Yeah, that was wow. Alec. So yeah, so that
good
was
eye, a, man.
Fun,
look at you.
A fun side note. And then I remember when that happened, she was so excited. But you see in that scene that she's teaching these young children mm-hmm. the lie. She says yeah. to them, you know, the regressives killed each other because they were so stubborn.
How backward they were, you know.
They were so backward that they killed each other. And so there are no more regressives. Now there's just us. And
yeah.
you kind of go, that's when I was like, oh my God, it's the
big She's lie. Brainwashed.
It's a
yeah.
big lie.
She's spouting. She's basically just regurgitating what her father said.
Lies.
You know what I'm saying? Everything, the lies. Yeah. Can I just go back to the execution yeah. scene of Dathan?
Yeah.
He's essentially burned at the stake.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It was like a futuristic version of being burned at the stake. And then right after that, when the crowd starts chanting, you see Corinna join in.
Oh, yeah.
And what is she doing? The one arm up, which is definitely a reference to the, you know, the Nazi salute, the Sieg Heil, the Heil Hitler sort of a one arm up. So that reference was definitely not lost upon me in that one scene. Let's move on to the after the teaching the young children.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, B'Elanna is incredibly affected by this and goes to the mess hall and decides that she's got to tell everyone the truth. And in the middle of this, you know, farewell to our new friends, B'Elanna tells the truth. The Anarans say that this is, they're, you know, they're offended, they're shocked, that's not the truth. Torres even accuses the main Anaran of having killed Jorah, that he had her killed because he knew that she was passing on the truth and he wanted to suppress the truth. And Janeway says she can't support B'Elanna's story. She doesn't have any proof, but she does say, you know, go speak to the younger Anarans and tell them what you've experienced, which is kind of like that scene in her dream where she was teaching the young children the lie. The captain's basically saying, go and pass on the truth.
Well, I mean, Torres asked Janeway, she says, can I go down to the planet to investigate this, to find out what's going on? And Janeway kind of cites the prime directive. She's saying, we can't really interfere. Torres says, well, wait a minute, we can interfere because Jorah Morell was killed aboard Voyager. The doctor, according to Janeway, could not find any proof of that. But then Janeway sort of feels, you know, Janeway does side with Torres. She goes, I do believe that those memories are real.
Yes.
So what you can do is, you know, go talk to the engineers that are still here. They're packing up, right? And that's when she finds Jessen in engineering and convinces her, like, listen, look into this cover-up, ask questions.
Yep.
And why don't you, I wish you could, you know, relive these memories. And Jessen's like, yeah, I can make this connection. And she agrees, and she does. She via the psychic palm, the psychic Heisman, she gets the memories from Torres, which were passed on to her from Jorah Morell.
And it's the same scene. We go back to the exact same scene.
The intro
now
scene.
Now she wakes up. Jessen wakes up in the same shot, the same, you know, chiffon gown, nightgown that B'Elanna was in when she experienced the memory. And now Jessen's experiencing the same shots and the same blocking. And so the truth will get passed on, and hopefully with younger people who are open to hearing the truth will come out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's your theme?
Yeah, my lesson from this episode is that we need to be tolerant of all people and their beliefs to prevent another genocide from happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it all started with this lack of accepting the regressives as part of their culture, and sprung from that all the rest of it. Yeah, my theme slightly different, but my takeaway, my lesson, is the old saying, the truth will set you free. This idea that these memories that B'Elanna was experiencing were the truth. Everything else had been a big lie. And so the truth starting to reveal itself will actually set them free and let them heal and be a more authentic society and not based on lies. So the only way to learn from the past and to move forward and grow and be authentic is to be honest and live with the truth. So yeah, that's my theme.
Thank you guys for tuning in for this week's coverage recap of Remember. Stay tuned next week when we get to recap Robbie's first episode as a director in the history of his directing career, Sacred Ground. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. The beginning of Robbie as we know now on Sacred Ground. Can you believe that? This is going to
be a big episode for me, guys. I'm excited about that one.
I'm so excited about that. Okay, and Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus content.
Yeah, we're talking to Lisa Klink in the bonus material. We got all kinds of fun stuff. So
all kinds of fun stuff.
Thanks, patrons, for sticking with us. And for the rest of you, tune in next week. We'll see you for Sacred Ground.